Grief is a natural part of life, and we all experience it at some point. By becoming aware of our emotions in the process of grief, we can begin to accept and move through our pain. Acceptance doesn't mean that we forget or stop feeling the loss, but it allows us to come to terms with it. And finally, we can choose to honour our loved ones by celebrating their life and finding meaning in our grief. Join me as we explore these pillars of grief and how they can help us navigate the journey of grief. We will explore this journey together, and you will hear from experiencers, experts, and researchers. I'm Jock Brokas, and this is The Pillars of Grief. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jock here, and this is Pillars of Grief. You know what? I nearly said it was one of the other podcasts I was on. So I'm really excited. So today we've got a really, really good friend of mine, Dr. Charleston Gaines, who has experienced his own journey of grief and is probably still experiencing it. And I wanted to bring Charleston on to discuss the many aspects of grief, especially from a man's point of view, and then just see where we go with this journey. And of course, once you guys listen to this, then you can connect with us and ask us any other questions. But I'm delighted to have my friend, psychologist, military brother in arms. This is Dr. Charleston Gaines. How are you, Charleston, my friend? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. I just feel like we have so much to offer, and it's exciting to just to be a part of, you know, of your projects and everything we got going on, man. I'm excited.
No, I wanted to bring you on because it's, you know, since we've got to know each other and we've shared stages and we've spoken in different groups and things, one thing that I learned about you, you know, and by the way, it's not that long that you finished your PhD and got your doctorate, but you know, you've been on your own grief journey yourself. Since losing your mum, you know, I don't know how, a few years ago. How have you been? How did you cope with that?
Well, I'm gonna kind of spin it a little bit in the sense of when I think of grief. So I lost my mom in August of 2019, and when I say I'm gonna spin it, what I mean is that so there's a way that I handled that grief of losing my mother.
Yeah.
But I also got divorced last year, and that was a different kind of grief. And I didn't even recognize that I was grieving that divorce until you and I had a couple conversations.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what I was going through, and then you told me.
It's grief.
Because I always associated grief with death, but grief is about loss, and I lost something. But with the divorce, what I lost was something that I still see every day because of our kids. And so the way I handled the two was very different.
Yeah.
And so you asked about my mother. That was your initial question. So I'm going to answer that.
Yeah, because you jumped with the gun, because I was going to bring in later on. I was like, he's got there before me. I was going to bring in that part later on, because you're right. Everybody equates grief with this whole aspect of death, but we don't realize that grief is so much deeper. So yeah, let's talk about your mom and how you dealt with it, and then let's go into the other aspect of grief.
Okay, well, so with my mom, what happened with my mom was that at the time, I had this job where I was doing a lot of teaching, and I worked with a really good friend of mine who introduced me to emotional intelligence. So I was combining emotional intelligence. Well, I call it the PEN methodology, positive psychology, emotional intelligence, and neuroscience. And I was teaching a lot of that. How does gratitude impact the body and the mind? And what about mindfulness meditation and all of these things, right? Mm. Then when my mother passed, I had to really practice what I preach. You know, it's one thing to tell someone how to get over grief based on your research when you've never actually done it.
But yes. I know you're going there.
and so for me, it was the question that I had to ask myself was, What would she want me to do, and how do I honor my mother? Yeah. All right, and so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you, man, I'm going to tell you something that I'm telling you, man, I literally have never told anybody this.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing it now in the Pillars of Grief.
So, and I'm an emotional dude. That's how I am. So it might hit me a little bit telling this because I've never said it to anyone else. So what people know about that night, like my ex-wife, my kids, you know, some other people, is that usually, so my mom had an accident and she had lost her left leg. So I moved her to an apartment a couple miles away from me. Sometimes her phone wouldn't be next to her. So when you would call her, she'd call back within 30 minutes or so. She would hear it. She would go get her phone. She'd check it. She'd call you back. Kind of a normal thing. And so this one night, my ex called her and she didn't call back. I'm like, oh, that's fine, whatever. And then another couple hours passed and my ex was like, your mom hasn't called. I think you should check on her. And I was like, yeah, that's odd. And it was funny how the memory works, because I can tell you that this was Thursday, August 15th, 2019. Wow. And this was a little after 7 o'clock at night. And so I was dealing with some shame because I was dealing with gout at the time. And so I had a kind of a gout flare-up, but not too bad. And the way you have a gout flare-up is some of the stuff that you eat or drink. So I had a little bit too much steak and soda that weekend. And so I did not go see my mom like on Tuesday, like I normally do.
Yeah.
But she would always call me and say, I'm fine, don't worry about it. And I would just come over anyway. But this time she called and said, I'm fine, you don't have to come over. And I said, okay. The reason I said okay was because I had a mini gout flare, but nobody knew that. So anyway, this is Thursday. I saw my mom on Sunday. I took her to church every Sunday. I talked to her on Monday. Tuesday, she left me a voicemail saying, don't come over. And now it's Thursday, and I'm driving over there, and I'm concerned. And I have a key to the apartment. So I get to the apartment. The door is locked. I unlock it. I enter the apartment, and my mother is lying on the floor.
Oh, my God.
So what's the first thing you do? You first of all, you just want to check.
Yeah.
You know, is there a pulse? Is there breathing? Whatever. Yeah. And there was none of that. So I'm screaming at her, right? She's not responding. So I start chest compressions. On the third chest compression, I felt a couple of her ribs break.
Wow.
That sucked.
Because that now sucked. You're also bringing in an element of guilt here.
And the thing about it, though, I'm the kind of person, I think so much, I can say, and I'm an overthinker. So as my emotions are raging, I'm also having these secondhand thoughts in the back of my mind. And so there's this thought in the back of my mind that's saying, it doesn't matter because she's already gone.
Mm.
And I call 911, and 911 operator's asking me, we need to know, has she passed? Should we send someone to try to save her life, or is it already too late?
Wow.
So my thinking brain told my emotional brain, bro, you know the answer. Skin was cold, no breath, no heartbeat. There was like a little bit of like, you can just tell in her face, right?
Yeah. You can feel
so
it.
So I told the 911 operator, she's gone. Wow. So to be the one to make the decision, I really didn't make a decision. Like, I didn't decide that she passed.
She'd
that
already gone.
Decided.
Yeah, it was, you. Yeah.
But I'm the one that made the declaration after I'd already broken her ribs, knowing that if she'd already passed, a broken rib doesn't matter anyway. So when it comes to dealing with grief, for me, it was, there's just this overwhelming sense of like guilt and shame where there's nothing I could have done about that, about her passing. It was,
no,
we called it sudden heart failure. She had type 2 diabetes. She had cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
So she had different issues, high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And so from a logical standpoint, it wasn't shocking.
Yeah.
From an emotional standpoint, seeing someone you love in that condition is shocking.
That's your mom.
So in the moments after that, what happened, I'm going to tell you a little bit about empathy, right? I'm going to change the subject a little bit, right? So when someone's going through something, you don't just say, oh yeah, I know how that feels. Because you might be lying.
No, you don't. Exactly. You got to get in with them and feel it with them.
But what happened on this night was the cops show up. And I'm sitting on the sofa. You know, my mom has a sheet over her at this point in time. I did hug her some more that night before the cops showed up. And this cop puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, I understand. I know how you feel. And I'm thinking, like, do you really? Like, that's, I don't need that. And then he says to me,
yeah,
my mom passed 2 years ago. And we connected. I was like, wow. Like, when he says he understands, he meant it.
Yeah.
And then my ex called. You know, I say my ex, but we were still married at the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so my phone, it showed on the phone, the caller ID, that it was her. I didn't answer the phone. So then he was like, this cop, he was a sheriff. He said, would you like me to call her back? And I nodded. And he called her and told her what happened.
Wow.
Like that.
Dude, that's so hard.
It is. But when you think about, like, if you were to look at the job description of a sheriff, like, is that in the job description? To call the wife and say, this is what happened.
I don't, you know, I actually don't know. I don't think it is in the job description because I mean, even when my military days and things, we never had anything like that in any of our descriptions.
Yeah, right. And so then what happened is, so then she comes over and she asked me, my brother lived about 45 minutes away at the time, you know, and I say at the time, cause this was in Maryland, whereas I'm in Florida now.
Yeah.
And then she says, would you like me to call your brother? And so she calls my brother. And like, I was not able to. And so this is about empathy and compassion. People taking up for what I'm unable to do in the moment. Mm. And when we talk about grief, it's so overwhelming that there's some things you just cannot do. And my brother shows up.
It's debilitating, is what it is. I mean, it's totally debilitating. And I love how you say, you know, people they have a lot of platitudes. They don't really understand it unless they've gone through it. And I think it's important to make the distinction that you made, that you went through emotions of guilt and shame. And, you know, I think people need to understand that guilt is a behavior, and the shame is you're feeling, you feel bad, you feel that you've done something bad. And so all that compounded with everything you're going through in the moment, there's just no way you can operate, and you don't want anybody putting their hands on you and saying it's going to be all right, you're going to be strong, or just it's not good.
Yeah. So what happened was, so later that night and on to the next day, so then my brother called my dad, who lived in Arizona, and so he flew out. And it was just a matter, from my perspective, of how do I honor my mother? How do I honor her? How do I show her respect? And so when it comes to the pain of grief, there's times where it's overwhelming and you just have to let it do what it does.
Absolutely. You have to feel it in every aspect of it and not be ashamed to feel it.
Exactly, exactly. And so when I would feel that way, I just let it do what it did. If there were tears, if there was crying, if there was isolation, I did that. And sometimes you got to put yourself over other people in the moment and just say, like, I'm not available for that right now. Like, I'm hurting, I'm in pain. And so that does what it does. But then there's other moments where you have some, maybe some clarity or some, a little bit more bandwidth on your mind. And it's in those moments where I was like, okay, how can I honor my mother? What did my mom really want? And what she really wanted was for people to be nice and to be happy, right? So when it comes to honoring those you've lost, it's not always about setting up a memorial fund or a scholarship charity. We don't have to do all those things.
No, you don't. No.
It was, what did my mom want me to do? She wanted me to be nice and to be happy. And then my father shows up and he has a lot of guilt and a lot of shame over the way things went between the two over the last 20, 30 years. And so part of me honoring my mother and dealing with my own grief was taking my dad through these processes of being intentional about gratitude and taking a deep breath. And then when it really hurts, letting it hurt, not trying to stop it, and having that conversation of, like, you're not less of a man if you break down in tears.
You know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, we know that men basically hide behind their feelings. They don't want to express them. And oftentimes, and I'm glad that you said that, Charleston, because it's oftentimes a man is too afraid and too ashamed to show their grief or their real feelings. And I can imagine your dad being a man's man, that could have become a worse situation hadn't you been able to help him through his grief. And what I find fascinating and what I find remarkable is that it wasn't a long period of time that you started to be the support system for your father after the event, yet you're still coming to terms, and not even coming to terms, you've begun your own grief journey. Now, you might be a little bit further ahead because understanding psychology and positive psychology and understanding that, you know, that psych, if you like, do you think that immediately helped you, that you were then able to see the pain and see the suffering in your father to help him? And do you also think that you helping your father helped you to face some things?
Well, it's... So, okay, first of all, yes, my psych background did help me. And the things that I was teaching did help me, because it's one of those things where it's like, what you should do to deal with pain, with sadness, is a question that I've answered 100 times. So I couldn't all of a sudden act like I didn't have access to that information. I hadn't practiced it on this level before, but I had kind of the blueprint. I had the checklist.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I could go through the checklist. What should I do now? And one very important part of the grieving checklist that I think most men will ignore, and I'm telling you, this is for grieving men, do not ignore that part of you when you need a hug.
Dude, that is so, even losing my father and the way that I lost my loved ones and people that were close to me, and even brothers as well, in the military, We need to have a hug. I mean, geez, just to feel that connection. But the thing that I find is that men feel so disconnected and they don't know how to seek connection.
You're absolutely right. And that's why we have to understand that it's important to always be working on our relationships. Oh, one thing I always say is that every interaction with someone needs to be a reflection of the value of that relationship. Every time I talk to you, Jock, you need to come away from that interaction. Like, I need to make sure you don't come away from there feeling like I no longer respect you or like you.
Yeah.
Like, every time I interact with you, you need to be able to tell. So yeah. I don't have to tell you all the time, I care about you, you're my brother, I got your back.
Yeah.
We can share that energy with each other the way that we interact. And so...
Absolutely.
So when you're dealing with loss, you're not now starting to create something. You don't have the energy.
Yeah.
You're hurting. And I'll give you an example. What I mean by that is when you're grieving, sometimes the pain comes up out of nowhere. It's unexpected. One night we went out, it was my ex, our kids, we went out and then we come back home and my oldest daughter, I think she was 16 at the time, 15 or 16 at the time.
Yeah.
She thought I had an attitude. She didn't know what was going on with me. So I come in the house first. She comes in after me. She's giving me this look. But she's a kind of young woman who has a really big heart. And so she started to say something. And I interrupted her. And I said, I just need a hug right now.
It's amazing you could ask for that. You know, that how many people can ask for that? You asked for that. That's one thing, guys, if you're listening out there, listen to what he said. He just asked. You got to ask.
I asked my daughter. I wasn't afraid of her thinking I was weak. I wasn't afraid of her thinking I'm less of a man.
Yeah.
Because it's important that our kids know that we need them too.
You know, it's interesting. Let me ask you this, though. Let me throw this at you, right? Because it's easy for you to ask your daughter, I just need a hug right now, right? But let me throw you into the situation where you're maybe out with your buddies, right? You're having pizza and you're having a beer or a Coke, whatever it is, right? And something triggers you that brings that grief up. Do you think that you would have been able to say to your buddy, you know, dude, you know, I just need a hug?
See, every relationship is different. So I can tell you with my friends, I wouldn't have to say that. First of all, we have the kind of relationships where my friends know what's going on in my life.
Ah, there you go. Yeah.
So if I were to need a hug, my friends wouldn't say, what's going on with him? They already know.
They know.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't have to ask for a hug. I could say, and I could do the same to you.
Yeah.
I could look at you and I could say, bruh. And I could put my arms out. It's simple as that. And so, like, I know that I can do that. And I know that I can do that with my friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And they know that I'm available. You know, I like to tell people, if you're hurting, or better yet, if someone you love is hurting, are you available for them to come to you? If you don't know the answer to that, like, do they know that you're available?
Mm.
And if you don't know the answer, why don't you know that?
And you know, that's a level exactly as you're talking. That's a level of empathy and compassion right there. That's when you're willing to get into the trenches with them.
And they have to know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're not always going to need that, because they're not always going to suffer tragedy.
Mm.
But if they know that, it helps them to understand and realize that they have value, that they matter, that they're important to you. And that should be the foundation of your relationship, not the transactions.
Yeah.
But the shared energy and experiences. And so for me, being able to do that with my daughter, that was huge for me. And we hugged as long as I needed. And then there are other times, for example, my son was in the high school band at the time. And they had a performance. And sometimes grief doesn't make sense to you.
No.
It doesn't. No. It doesn't ask your permission before it comes in.
It happens at any given time without you even... It's...
Yeah, and so what happened, actually, this was before my mom passed. This was after she had her leg amputated, but she was still alive.
So, all right, so hang on, because that's important, right? There, there's, you know, you and I both know that there's a level of anticipatory grief, right? Now, your mother had her leg amputated. You obviously started to go into some level of grief and loss before even she passed.
Right.
And so you were, did you ever compute in your mind or think in your mind, you know, she's lost a leg, how long is it going to be before I lose her?
No, actually, I knew that losing her was a possibility.
Yeah.
But in my mind, she was closing in on the point where she can begin to use a prosthetic. So in my mind, she was going to be walking again in 6 months, and that didn't happen.
So your expectations were, you suffered through your expectations as well.
Right, right. Wow. I remember one time when I was at the hospital with her. So we're in Walter Reed, I forget, it's like Walter Reed National Military Medical Center at Bethesda. It's the one where the president goes. And the way it is, when you're on the second floor, you can look over the balcony and see onto the first floor certain parts.
All right.
And so I'm pushing my mother in her wheelchair, and she sees a man walking with a prosthetic leg. And that was her first time ever seeing someone with a prosthetic leg walking.
Wow.
And so empathy and connection is why I knew to stop pushing her in the wheelchair and yet for a moment to watch this man walk.
That's amazing. That gives me chills, honestly. And I know it's emotional for you. I can see it in you. And you guys that can't see him, you know, this is an amazing moment to feel it, because that's a level of intuition as well, and knowing what your mother needed, knowing what she needed, and to recognize that and stop with her. I mean, that's, whew, I could stop us. Whoa, I gotta stop myself here.
And so there's different layers of grief, because so understand this. When you're really connected to someone, really empathetic, you can grieve with them as they grieve. And so my mother was grieving the loss of her previous life.
Because she was grieving the loss of her leg, which was her life, or part of her life.
Well, yeah, because she was a senior deacon at her church in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Thursday morning, she walks around the track. She walks 4 or 5 laps around the track. Thursday night, she's in the emergency room. Monday morning, her leg is being amputated in Maryland.
Wow.
And so it was very quick. And so, yeah, there was no time to prepare or to get ready. So all the life that she knew before
was gone.
The spending time with her friends that she'd been going to church with for 30 years, her pastor, all of that was done. She no longer lived in North Carolina. And so she was grieving that. And I'll tell you this,
that's grief.
So my mom is Korean, and so she has her accent. And I'm telling you that because when she says certain things and uses certain words, I know what she means.
Yeah.
And so what she said was, she said, "I better die." What she meant was, "I'd be better off dead."
The
thing about suicide is that some people, there's just some people that no matter what they go through in life, they will never take their own lives. They just won't.
And a lot of the times when they talk about it, it's more of them trying to reach out and trying to be heard and trying to get that attention because they feel they're disconnected and lost. But you know, when someone says it, they don't say, "I'm going to commit suicide." They say something like your mother said. That's when they really feel it.
Right. And so I knew that she did not have the capacity to take her own life. But those words are a representation of her grief manifesting.
Yeah.
Whereas I could think about her getting a prosthetic leg. I know more about medicine and science than she does and all that, right? So I can think about that. the time it takes for me to be my normal self to the time that she gets a prosthetic leg, nothing changes in my life.
Yeah.
Because I still had both legs.
Everything changed for her.
Right. And so for her, it was hard to even envision a different life. It was hard for her to envision a life where she did not have to be in a wheelchair. Wow. But from my perspective, that time was coming.
Yeah.
So I had a different kind of hope than her. And I also...
Did you try to instill it in her to try and get her to see a new vision, a new reality?
No, I didn't. What I did was there's a couple different layers to this, right? And so the first one for me is feeling like you have value and purpose.
Yeah.
And so there's two different ways we did that. And part of it is the value and purpose to elevate the hope. And that was taking her to church every Sunday. So now she feels like she's a part of a new church, and she was an inspiration. There were people in that church that had never interacted with someone who was an amputee.
Oh, wow.
And then when she would speak on it, it was like, oh, I can tell by the way you're speaking. Yeah, you were a senior deacon. Yeah, you've been in the church a long time. Yeah. You know? And so that gave her life a different meaning. But then also, as a mom and a grandmother, it's like I gave her opportunities, or we gave her opportunities to provide for us. So that she felt like she was making a contribution in our lives, because I didn't want her to feel like she's such a burden.
Right.
Like, how was she a burden when she cooked dinner and we all came over?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And how was she a burden when I can drop my... So my oldest daughter, there were times where I would drop her off at my mom's apartment and they would watch TV together for a couple hours. And so those are the kinds of things where I was trying to have that positive impact in her life.
Yeah.
And so we often overlook that. When you're in that situation, you feel helpless, you feel like a burden, you feel like you used to be independent and you're not anymore. And so if you know someone in that predicament, give them opportunities to contribute to your life. And so that's what we were doing, with the mindset of, pretty soon, maybe she'll get a prosthetic leg and she'll start walking again, things like that. But that was taken from us on the day that she passed. And so the grieving process, I can tell you the grieving process after someone passes, there's certain things that you know to be true. You know, for example, I know I'm not taking her to church anymore, right? I'm not talking about some deep philosophical thing.
There's things that you do that you know is just, it's not there anymore, and you have to face that. Right. You have to have an awareness and acceptance of it, that it's changed. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah, exactly. And so then there's the process of accepting it. And so for me, that was part of it. But one thing that happened with me, and I did not expect it. I'll tell you this. After my mom passed, I used to dream about her all the time. And the dreams felt real.
Very vivid. And I know. So, I remember you saying to me, I remember when we met in Florida, you were telling me that's the dreams you had were right there.
So I had a dream about her that felt so real, that I'm grateful to her for the dream, when, of course, depending on what you believe, she wasn't really there, right? Everyone has their different beliefs or whatever. But what happened was, in this dream, I was searching for her. I was wondering what was going on. Like, she's in trouble. I need to save her. And in my dream, I could see her when she called me, and she called and she said, "I'm okay. I'm in the kitchen." Like, that was the whole dream.
I remember you telling me. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like that dream was so powerful for me.
What do you think then? Because, I mean, you know I'm a medium. You know that I deal with the afterlife stuff. But let me ask you this. What was the message in that dream? Because I know you're very scientific, and you and I, we're both scientific. Even me as a medium, I'm very scientific. But what was the meaning in that dream for you personally? Not Charleston the psychologist, but Charleston the man, the son. What was it for you?
It was the acceptance that those words are true, that she is okay.
That's it. That's exactly what I wanted to hear, because, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. When you know, whether you believe the dream is a connection or not, just the discernment and the validation, and I want to say the deep knowing that you had, Charleston, is enough to spark that comfort inside of you to realize that they're okay. And it's amazing that you had that.
Yeah, and it was really comforting. And I'll say this, when we look at things from a scientific perspective, right? We look at the scientific method. You can run these tests, run these processes, yeah, run these experiments. And sometimes you don't come up with an answer. The results are not statistically significant. And so when it comes to something like this, you come to the conclusion that I don't know and it's okay. I don't have an answer and it's okay. And you have to be able to accept that. You can't have this attitude of, I'm going to figure everything out. I don't need to figure it out. She said she's okay. We're done.
That's beautiful. Do you know what? That is so beautiful. Because honestly, it is. I know we've talked about this before, but just even sitting now with you again, it's like in a whole nother level of understanding it. Just to know the road. You don't have to believe in anything. You just need to know and know inside your heart they're okay, and that's enough.
And so then another thing that happened is, you know, when you have a dream, regardless of what you may visually see in your dream, you can know where you are. It's like, so you know when you're home in your dream. So since my mother's passing, every dream that I've ever had, except for one, I remember one time about 3 weeks ago, it didn't work out this way. But besides that, every dream I've had in the last 3.5 years where I was at home, in my dream at home, was my mother's house.
Wow. Do you know something is really weird, Charleston? As much as I've dealt with my work as a medium over the years and the loss that I've experienced, which has been a lot, even with my I have never, and anybody who's listening out here, right, I have connection with my father now, but I've never dreamt of my father. Never. Which I find really strange, right? You would think, as someone like me who works in this field, that would have dreams all the time. I haven't. I've never dreamt of my father on the other side. So for you to have that, it's amazing to have that experience. And a lot of you out there, that's a gift and that's a blessing. And even though I've never had it, I've had other connections, obviously, and that makes a difference. But your dreams are exceptionally powerful. And don't discard them in any way.
Well, yeah, you can give them meaning.
Absolutely.
You can give them value. And for me, what it is with these dreams, the value is that I'm just grateful for it. There's so many things going on today where there's so much thinking and debate and philosophy and so on. Yeah. And it's not always required, man. It's like, I'm grateful, and that's the whole, all of it. I'm grateful.
Are you grateful for your, I mean, this is a loaded question, bro, but are you grateful for your grief? I told you it was loaded. That is loaded.
I've never thought of being grateful for the grief. And so let me kind of reword that for you and for myself. I'm grateful that I had the ability and the opportunity to grieve.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Because it's taught you so much.
Exactly. And I mean, maybe on another episode I can tell you all the things I learned from my mom when I thought I was helping her.
Yeah, we're definitely going to be doing another one. There's no doubt about that.
but so the thing about it is, being able to grieve her is really an opportunity for me to almost decide, where are my thoughts and emotions going to go? Where's my energy going to go? And I think that's very important, because it's easy to get overwhelmed in grief. And I was coming from a perspective and a practice of resilience, emotional intelligence, gratitude, things like that. So then when my mom passed, I began to practice more the things I was already talking about. If I was not familiar with those things, what would I have done? I don't know.
Now, what about your brothers and your father? Because obviously you have an understanding of the psyche. You have an understanding of resilience, emotional intelligence, of a mindful practice, and the practices that you're espousing now that you took on board straight away. But what about your brothers and your father? They never had that.
Well, my father... look, so here's a part of the story some people know, but I don't talk about very often. My father was diagnosed with cancer about 6 weeks before my mom passed.
Wow.
So my father flew out. So he lives in Arizona. He flies out to Maryland. He saw my mom in the funeral home. And that's when he was overwhelmed with emotion, when he saw her. And then that's when we had conversations about honoring her life, what would she want us to do in the moment. But he couldn't stay for the funeral. He couldn't stay for the burial and memorial ceremony because he had to go back and start his radiation.
Wow.
So my dad's perspective was completely different than anyone else's, like that I'd ever heard of. Obviously, it's happened before with other people, but I haven't heard of it.
No.
And so he couldn't stay for the funeral because he had to go back to start radiation.
Are you struggling with grief? Hi, I'm Jock Brokas, a grief researcher, author, spiritual mentor, and renowned evidential medium. Join me on the Pillars of Grief podcast. Through personal teachings and interviews with experienced researchers and educators, I will provide valuable insights and support to help you navigate your journey through grief. I will answer the questions you yearn to be answered, and I'll help you understand your journey. Listen and subscribe to the Pillars of Grief podcast today on your favorite platform and start navigating your journey through grief. So do you think him facing his mortality and then losing his wife, his ex-wife, obviously, no matter what went beyond before them, do you think him having to face that has helped him? Let me ask you, how's your father now? Is your father, did he get through the cancer?
Yeah, he got through the cancer. They caught it very early.
Oh, that's brilliant. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you think it helped him in any way? I mean, at all?
I do think so. Don't want to act like, you know, I'm all that, but our conversations helped him a lot.
Oh, I remember you had I got to remember back to the conversations you and I had, but I remember you had a conversation with him when you were in the car, you were driving somewhere, and was it about him crying or was it about him facing something?
Oh, well, in the car, that happened. We had that hard conversation in the car after he saw her at the funeral home.
Right. I remember we talking about this.
Right. I mean, imagine the things that you feel the most guilt and the most shame for, whatever that is. And then in this one moment, you look at the physical manifestation, you look your shame in the face. I mean, that's what he experienced.
Being there. Yeah.
And so a few days after that, he was flying back to Arizona to start cancer treatment.
That must have been, I want to say, what must have been going through your father's mind at that time? I mean, really, it doesn't even bear thinking.
Yeah, and you know, when we spoke of empathy, that's another thing where I would not say to him, I know how you feel.
Yeah, but you just, you got in, you know, you got in the trenches with him.
Yeah, I did. And I talked to him about, I mean, you know, And I mentioned the Penn methodology earlier, right? And so the N is for neuroscience. And so part of it for me was talking to him about what happens in the brain. I was like, look, Dad, when you think like this and feel like this, it impacts your brain like this, which impacts your immune system like this. And so to let you know that there is a physiological, scientific component to why you're more likely to survive cancer treatment if you have a sense of gratitude, positivity, and optimism. And so, okay, let's practice that. Let's practice this optimism.
Do you think that did you help him change his mindset? Did he have a complete reversal of that mindset?
I would say yes, but at the same time, understanding it's a process. So no, you did not have a complete change in mindset that day.
Oh, no, but obviously you sow the seed, and then I'm sure it wasn't the only conversation you guys had. So
right.
you're going to have to help him to transform his mindset.
Right, and so even now, he's intentionally choosing happiness daily.
That's amazing.
And if you do that to the point where it's a habit, it's because what happens when you're happy, there are things that happen in your body. Emotions are physiological. And so your body's used to kind of like the same way if you have a real quick donut and a glass of milk before bed every night. Then yes. You're going to start to actually get hungry every night before bed. You don't need that, but your body's used to it.
Hang on, dude. Have you got a camera in my house or something? Because it's like 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, it's not a cookie and a glass of milk. It's something a little more substantial. All right. I'm paranoid now.
Yeah. And you get used to it, man. You're used to it.
It's an alarm system goes, oh, it's 10 o'clock. I better go and get a snack.
And so happiness is the same way. There's certain points where you're just expecting, your body is almost expecting to have a little serotonin boost, a little dopamine boost, right? Mm. Just like when they say work out at the same time every day, and then you subconsciously, your mind and body prepared to start to exercise because that's what you do. And so happiness is just what you do. It's a habit. So then when
because here's the thing I've been thinking of recently. We can't, and I know we're talking about grief, but we can't be happy all the time. Because if we were in a constant state of happiness, how would we grow?
Yeah, you're right. And so people actually define happiness different ways. And the way that I look at it is when I say happiness, you can be a happy person.
Yeah.
A happy person can have an extremely sad day.
Yep, absolutely.
And so that's the way that I look at it. So when I say choose happiness every day, don't confuse that with I'm going to ignore this dude punched me in the face. That's not what I'm saying. Oh, that hurt, but I choose happiness. No, you might need to duck or run or punch back.
Yeah. It's hard when we come into the grief aspect of it, though. It's so hard for someone who is grieving to be able to bring that into front of mind, to be able to choose happiness, because they've lost their sense of choice.
Well, but so that's the thing, though, is you may have lost your sense of choice, but what happens is there are moments. So this is what that I look at it. On the first day, it's shocking. So the grief is overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But it subsides over time.
Mm-hmm.
There might maybe 6 or 7 days later, there's a period of 30 to 45 minutes where you forgot something bad happened. And you're back to your default state.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is that default state happy or sad? And so, because when I say choose happiness, you have to choose happiness when the grief is subsiding.
When it's down low. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, so for example, when people are, I'll say this, like when there's a flood, right? Your house is flooded.
Yeah.
You got 3 inches of water. You have to wait for the water to subside before you start the repairs.
That's a brilliant analogy, actually. And that's just like grief. You have to wait until it subsides until you can deal with it. Right. You can't deal with it full on.
Yeah, and you can't say, well, I'm a real man, it doesn't hurt. No,
it hurts.
The grief is going to do what it does.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. That article that I wrote a couple of weeks ago, I think I had about 26 different men had reached out who had never had the chance to express their grief and felt so lost in it. And just to be able to have that to say to them, it's okay.
Yeah.
You have to wait. Exactly. You have to wait. Let it subside. And then you can actually start to deal with it.
Right. You take advantage of those moments.
Yeah.
And then what you'll find is, so your habits before the event, they come back.
Yeah.
So if you are not practicing gratitude before, it's not going to come back as a habit.
No.
And so whatever your mindset was before, when that comes back, if it was a negative mindset, then you're going to come back to that mindset. You may come back worse. But if you were working on something before, if you were working on gratitude, elevating your mindset, building these other relationships, in those moments where the grief subsides, then your attention can go to those things. And then over time, the amount of grief, the grief work subsides completely. And when I say it subsides completely, I'm saying you get to a point where you almost never get triggered by it.
Yeah, because I was going to say, it's the triggers will be less. Or because I see, I don't believe it subsides completely. What I believe is it's there in the background, but you're able to control it. And you're because I, as far as that, you know, is what I teach is you never heal from grief. It's a journey that you go on, but you get to accept it, become aware of it, get the acceptance. And whilst it's there, it's like your ego. It's in the back room and right. It's kind of, you know, it's simmering.
You're right. I completely agree with you. And part of that for me, part of the honoring my mom in this grief is doing something that I think would make her proud.
Yeah.
And so, but that's the relationship. That's knowing who she is. So what would make her proud? Me doing things to make my kids laugh, that would make her proud. If I go squat 600 pounds, she wouldn't care. She would be like, that would have no value. She would say, that's dumb, come eat. That's what she would say.
Yeah, she'd just be a mom, okay? No, she'd be your mom all over again. Don't be so silly, Charleston, you're not going to kill me.
Exactly. You know, and so how do I honor her? I live a life that... where she could be proud of me. And so when I look at it from that perspective, again, it doesn't matter what you believe from a spiritual aspect or religious aspect, no. Whatever it is, it's she would have been proud of me if she was here today. And that feels good to say that, but that comes with like a side item, like a single serving of grief kind of comes on the side,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's that element of it. It's not gone. It's just, it's there, but you can face it.
Yes, yes. You can face it. And part of facing it is knowing.
Yeah.
Like, so she knows that I love her. She knows that I miss her. And so she would be okay with me having positive, happy memories with her and of her instead of me breaking down crying all the time 4 years later. She would be like, I want you to be happy.
And you know, I'm glad you said that, because that's what I've said to a lot of people is if you keep living in a life, if you keep living your life in sadness and regret and in your own prison that you create of your expectations, your loved ones on the other side, whatever you believe in, don't want you to be unhappy. They don't want to see you crying and suffering. They don't want to see you in that state. And I think what you're saying here is, you know, the best way to honor your loved ones is to live your life with no regrets, with being happy and serving and being the family man, making your siblings laugh and serving people. Honoring in that way is better than anything, any memorial you could put in, and the memory lasts forever.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, and that really goes to your relationship with that person. And that's why I say every interaction you have with someone should be a reflection of their value and worth to you.
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you that every single time I saw my mom, you know, when she was in Maryland, when we lived there, every time I left her apartment, I said, "Bye, Mom, I love you." And I would give her a hug and she would say, "Bye, I love you too." And then maybe there's another word or two, but I can tell you for a fact that among the last 5 or 6 words that I ever said to her in person and on the phone included the words, "I love you."
That's amazing. I never had that chance with my father at all. And the thing was, is you weren't saying it glibly, because some people will say, "Love you," and they don't necessarily, it just throws off the tongue. But you really embodied that, right? You really embodied it.
I'm so intentional about these things. So I literally was intentional, and I looked her in the face, made eye contact, and said, "I love you, Mom."
Yeah, see, that's...
Very intentional. Very intentional. Because, you know, there's a saying, right? YOLO, you only live once.
Yeah.
That's true of everybody you love. They also only live once. So don't let them question their value to you. You don't have to be running up, "I love you," all the time. You don't have to overdo it. But every interaction, they should be able to feel that energy. Even if you don't say the words. Because some people, that's not how they are. They're not going to say the words. But there's something that they do, something about their interaction where love energy is expressed and shared.
You know, I what you're saying there is quite powerful for me as well, because that's an element of regret that I have, that I never had that with my father. And so what would you say to someone? I mean, I know the answer, but because you're going to say the same thing as I'm going to say, but what would you say? what would you say to someone who's out there, who's maybe their mum, their dad, their brother, their sister is ill, and maybe they've got, you know, they're ruining their lives or whatever it is, or they're, you know, it's not going to be long before they cross over and their relationship is strained, and they've never really felt that. What would you tell them, Charleston? What would you tell them now if you had that opportunity to plant a seed in their mind?
So for me, it's, I take this back to emotional intelligence.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your values? What's important to you? And I say that because it's possible that there's a person who has hurt you so much that you're just not in a place to heal that relationship. And if that's an accurate description of you, don't judge yourself for it. You're no less of a person because you're unable to connect in that way.
Judgment. Amen. Exactly. Yeah.
And so, but part of that, so there's two parts. So there's the first part, right, where maybe you're thinking what you did to me was so wrong and so bad and so hurtful. You don't deserve my time. I don't want to get to know you. I don't care, whatever, whatever, right? Maybe you're, so if that's how you feel about someone that maybe will pass soon, are you going to be okay after they pass, or are you going to be full of regret? You need to know that about yourself. Setting yourself up to have regret later doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
And so would you be okay with that? And if you're not sure, err on the side of love.
That's great advice. I'd wish I had done that, because that's what I missed. That's what I lost. My last words to my father were not kind.
And so you say that, and it's like, if I could go back and look at how you were living your life and how everything was at that time, I bet I could find reasons why it was like that, which proves to me that you're a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's it. And so, because so many of the mistakes that we made in our lives, we did the best we could. And what happens is we will judge our actions from the past based on our knowledge now.
Mm-hmm.
We will also judge ourselves from the past based on our emotions now, because we will look at what we did in the moment and we will forget the pain that we were experiencing when we did it. We will forget the fear that we had, maybe the insecurity, maybe the self-loathing. We forget all of those things. And those things contributed to your inability to make a better decision at that time.
Absolutely.
And so you made a bad decision. You made a bad decision, but here today, you still are worth more. You still have value. It's not like if you made a better decision back then, your worth would be up like 1.2% or some crap.
No. And you know, I look back at it though, and I say, you know, I now know that for me, I wouldn't have changed. I wouldn't go back and change it, right? Because I think learning that through that experience has given me a deeper appreciation in order to help serve other people. So perhaps yes. It was meant for me. As much as a lot of the times people will say, well, I'd go back and I'd change I wouldn't regret it. I'd go back and I'd do it differently. I've learned now through my experiences, no, I wouldn't. I would probably still go back and do it all over again, because now knowing what I know, I'm able to help and serve so many more people through my experience.
By helping people repair those relationships, that's how you honor your father.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think, and I'm a big storyteller. I think I'm big on stories. So like, you know, as I said recently in the last episode, I tell them stories, tell stories of your loved ones. And I love telling stories of my father, because I don't remember so much then of the bad things, because I giggle at the fun things. As like you said, I'm choosing that level of happiness. And I guess it's the same with you. And you know, you probably tell stories about your mom like you just did. You know, when you tell stories about your mom, and that's what brings us these good vibes back.
Right, but when you have these good vibes, it's funny, because I feel like I should not have used the word but. I should have used the word and. And when you have these good vibes, you have an opportunity to savor the good vibes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What we often do is we're not fully convinced we deserve to be happy. So when something bad happens to us or we make a mistake, we can spend a lot of time ruminating on that because, well, I'm a bad person or I'm this or I'm that. But then when something good happens to you, you don't take the time to savor the moment and appreciate the positive attributes about you that brought about that good moment.
Yes.
Laugh a little louder, laugh a little longer.
Yeah, I can hear my father on the other side know exactly what he would be like.
Yeah. Like, let's laugh about it. When I make my baby girl laugh, I'm intentional about trying to get her to laugh a little longer. And I'm very intentional about trying to elongate these positive emotions. I want to savor them. I will tell her stories about when I was younger, when I was her age. And she just looks at me crazy. We went to get something to eat today, and I was telling her some stories of when I was a teenager. I explained to her our technique for stealing shirts out of stores.
Now, did your mom know this as well? Because she's listening now, dude. she was listening then.
Man, she was so. I'll say this, my daughter, 13 years old, looks me dead in the face and she says, "You were a little criminal." You know? And so what I want to do is I want to tie that back to grief.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mom says, "Be nice and be happy." One time when my two older ones, they were maybe 7, 8 years old, and my 13-year-old was, this was the week of her first birthday. So that's when it was. And I was so focused on my older kids following the rules.
Mm.
Because at the time, I equated compliance and obedience with being a good kid.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was there. And my mom said to me, "Why don't you give them a break and make them laugh?"
God, that must have been a really, I must have hit you like a ton of bricks.
Oh, it certainly did. And so now, even today, I make my kids laugh.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I do what my mom told me to do.
And that's the way you honor in your mother's memory.
Yes.
That's amazing.
My kids' laughter is honoring my mom.
That's amazing. And so, you know, listen, ladies and gentlemen, this is, you're learning here what it really means to be able to honor someone's memory without having to go through all the pomp and circumstance or that other people expect you to do in the headstones and God knows what else and beating yourself up about you could have done this, I could have done that. Listen and learn how Charleston is honoring his mother by making his daughters laugh and bringing happiness and joy. And that is phenomenal. Something you, if you take anything away from this session tonight, and we're going over, but we're going to be doing session two. There's no doubt about it. But I knew this would happen. But if there's anything that you take away from this podcast is the fact that you can honor your loved one by being happy, choosing to be happy, and honoring their memory by making people laugh.
Yeah, you know, a part of that for me is having kind of this voice in your head, what would my mom want me to do? So the loved one that you lost, what would they want you to do in the micro moments, in the small moments? And so, for example, when my oldest daughter, she's 19, and her hugs are longer than other people's hugs.
That's brilliant.
And I don't always think about it because I don't have to. But the question is, would my mom want me to hug her as long as she wanted?
Yeah.
And so the hugs are going to last a little longer, and I'm okay with that. And sometimes you have these other thoughts, right? You might have thoughts such as, like, maybe you're not in the mood or whatever. Things like that. And so when I have those thoughts, what I do is I breathe in deep and I exhale that madness.
I love that, Charleston. You listening, guys? Breathe in and breathe out the crap.
And so what happens when my daughter is hugging me and she feels me exhale like that? So what she feels is my shoulders relax, my chest relax, my arms, my body relaxes.
Yeah.
So then the hug is more relaxing to her. There is a physiological impact of hugs. We're not just playing a game. This is an opportunity. Hugs are opportunities to show love. Think about the things that you would do when you think about your wife or your siblings or your kids. How would you show them you love them? You can think about the trips that you take. You can think about the things that you would buy, all these things.
But you know what? The hug is the do you know, it's funny, Charleston, because through the group, you know, and you get ladies and gentlemen that are in the Pillars of Grief community in the group, Charleston will be joining me in there for a one-off evening where we'll be getting in this and it'll all be live with all you guys in the group. But one of the things that I can tell you, Charleston, from all the people that have helped in and just in the recent group, one of the things that they miss the most is the hug. The hug from their loved one, and the hug is the thing that they miss. And that is something that I hear all the time. I just want to hug them one more time.
Yes, yes, yes. Because nobody, and you know, I'll declare some things and I think from a scientific method. So if you can prove me wrong, go for it. There is nobody who ever said after a loved one passed, man, I shouldn't have hugged him that last time. I hugged her too much, too often.
You win. boom, that's the mic drop right there. There's no way that I'm, yeah, absolutely. There is not one person would say that. And I don't think there'd be anybody, you're right, that could actually say, no, I said that. No.
And let me tell you this. Let me tell you this about the hug, right? And so I'll give you a simple analogy. When you're walking with someone, and this happened in the military when you walked at a certain cadence.
Yeah.
But over time, when you're walking with someone, you end up being in step. We take our lefts and our rights at the same time subconsciously. The reason we do that is because we have our mirror neurons. That's why if something were to fly through a window that's, you know, it's over here to my side, it flies through the window and hits me in the head, you would probably duck.
I would. If it comes flying into you, I'd be going, whoa.
Yeah. And so what happens?
Yeah, you notice that. You know what? It's funny because you notice that. You know when you drive into the underground car parks, you're getting into the car parks, right? And you're hitting down there, and it's coming to the, and it says like, you know, this is the meters, and this is all that's left. I still do it. I go under it, and I go like, huh?
Yeah,
in
yeah.
the car.
And there's no threat. There's no threat. But on the flip side, the way the mirror neurons work is, when you hug someone, right, the same way we could be in step, the same way you could react to something happening to me is the same way that I can hug my daughter.
Mm.
And when we hug long enough, our heart rates will share the same rhythm. Our breathing will begin to match because we're sharing energy. So whether you want to talk about energy, frequency, neuroscience, physiology, that's what happens.
So, I mean, the science of it even proves that the hug is probably one of the most powerful, potent, energetic, and compassionate, loving things that you can do.
It really is.
And feel it.
And so, for a lot of people, there needs to be an understanding that, and when I say a lot of people, I'm saying that there are people who are uncomfortable with hugs.
Yeah. I used to be, yeah, absolutely.
And what you can do, everything I'm talking about, man, takes practice.
Yeah.
So who can you be vulnerable with? You can say to your wife, you can say to your husband, you can say to the one kid that you're more connected to than others, you can say, and it might be scary, but you can say it. You can say, I think that we should hug more, but it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you can say that. And deep down inside, you'd rather be driving 150 miles an hour in the rain than asking for a hug. But you know what?
I've been there. I am that guy. I'd be that guy. Like, you know? I remember coming over to America, and I turned to my wife, and I was like, man, they do some hell of... They hug everybody over here. It's weird. I'm like, because in Scotland, they're like, and you know, in the British military, and that you just... No, we don't hug, we don't do that sort of thing, you know, very kind of... I've learned, though, like, probably the hard way, I've learned that, yeah, it's not a namby-pamby thing at all. It's a very powerful, very... And that is the thing in grief that people long for the most, is that hug. Let me ask you this, because you hugged your mother when she passed.
Yes.
How did you feel in that moment?
I felt like I wanted to hug my mom one more time, so I was going to.
Yeah, exactly. That's just exactly what we're talking about right there.
It's one of those things, man, where it's like, as much as my emotions may have been overwhelming me, there's still a logical part of me that says, I'm not going to have very more opportunities to do this. So I'm going to do it again. And then there's all of these thoughts that can come into your mind and you treat them as information, as data. Like, for example, mm-hmm. if I started running off, yeah. like the number pi, right, is 3.14 something, something, something.
Yeah.
If I started to give those numbers to you, that's just information you don't need. You would be like, turn that off.
Dude, what's that about? It's the numbers.
Yeah. And so it takes practice, but learn to do that with your own thoughts. Like, dude, what's that about?
Yeah.
Now is not the time. And this is my mind talking to my brain. Now is not the time.
Mm.
We're not going to do that right now. And so sometimes you have to establish boundaries to protect yourself. You have to establish boundaries with yourself. You have to control. This is what my body is going to do. This is what my mind is going to do. This is what my heart is going to do. And this is what it's not going to do. We have to be, here's the thing with grief. When you are grieving, it can be overwhelming and the grief is going to do what it's going
to
do.
You can't stop it. That's the thing everybody needs to recognize. You will not stop it. It's not like you have control and you're stopping a train. You've just got to be able to receive it.
Exactly. You receive it. You cannot stop it. It's going to do what it does. But you can decide that you're going to heal from it. And you don't decide, I'm going to heal tomorrow. You decide, I'm going to embark on the journey when I'm available.
Yeah, absolutely. That journey is It's the biggest, the greatest journey you're ever going to go on. And it's the greatest journey that will be your greatest teacher.
Yeah, and it's a journey that'll never end. And the reason it'll never end is because you don't want it to. You don't want to get to the point where
you forget.
There's no grief left.
Yeah, exactly.
Grief is an extension of an emotion. And yeah. So I don't ever want to have no emotion when it comes to my mom. So I'm never going to turn that off. But there will come a point in time where I can say I've gone this many months or years without a trigger.
That's the important thing, is to reduce and lessen the triggers to the point where you have full control over the triggers.
Well, exactly. And with grief, there are triggers, and then there's the overwhelming grief that persists. But as it subsides, you have this gap. So the grief has stopped, and maybe it's going to start again in 3 hours. You don't know. So in those 3 hours, what are you going to fill that gap with?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's choose honor. We're going to honor this loved one. How are we going to do that? And I'm not talking about the ceremonies and the
eulogies.
I'm talking about what were her values and how can I live them? How can I align with her values? How can I demonstrate that I listened to her when she told me these things? When she told me to make my kids laugh like 15 years ago, how can I do that today? Well, you know what? I don't need some great plan. I don't. It's not some great philosophical, spiritual journey. It's, I'm going to tell my girl
it's
this
a choice.
Story about this.
It's a choice. Yeah. It's awareness, choice. Awareness, choice, and action.
Yeah, and so think about this. Think about this. Suppose someone passes away and you think to yourself, I should have listened more when she spoke to me. So you can't go back in the past and listen more. That's already happened.
That's done.
So how can you honor that person by being a better listener for other people who love you?
Exactly. You honor them by service. It's what I've said. You honor by service. I've taught that in our group as well. You honor them by choosing happiness in your life and by exemplifying living the best way that you possibly can without causing your own prison and suffering, and serving other people and serving others by what you learn and how you and how your journey is.
And when you serve other people, you will find more opportunities for a connection. You will find more opportunities to help them when they're down. And you will find that there's more people that care about you and love you than you thought. So that when you need help, there's more people there for you. And when I say more people, I'm not talking about 2025. I'm saying that right now, maybe you have two or three people that are there for you, and we increase that number to five. Mm. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about, you know, a whole gang of people. I'm talking about the number of significant relationships. If you have one, you need to cherish that one.
Absolutely.
If serving people can turn that one into three, it works both ways. Because you give them an opportunity to serve you. Don't think that you are so great, you are so magnificent, that you should deny other people the opportunity to serve you.
Oh,
they
want
to serve you. Don't deny them that opportunity.
Yes.
Show them you love them by being available and open to their opinions and perspectives.
Charleston, honestly, you and I could go on. This has been amazing. Look, you know, here's the reality. I want to give you one final thought. We've gone way over here, but we never even got into, I knew it was going to happen, we never even got into the realities of grief without the death, without that element of loss. So you're going to come back probably within the next week or two, because... Because, ladies and gentlemen, if you listen to this, there is going to be a part two. This is part one. And I have to, my audio guy is going to go nuts, because now I'm going to have to say, right, wait a minute, this is part one, dude. You're going to have to, there's going to be a part two to this. And then there's going to be a part three to this. And you're going to see Charleston here a few times. And obviously, for you guys that are in the group and listening, you're going to see him as my guest in there. But Charleston, give us a final thought on this honouring your loved one in the way that you explain it, and then we'll wrap it up there.
So, okay, let me start with this. I'm gonna tell you a story. I'm gonna try to keep all of this short, right? But so what happened was, I was leaving Tampa, I was leaving Kissimmee, right? I moved from Kissimmee here to Tampa, and so we had to sell the house. And the buyers bought the house from seeing it online, so they'd never actually been in the house. And so their realtor, their agent, came by to get a key from me to give to them so that they can come by and look at the house one day. She shows up, and the first thing she does is she begins to apologize. She's in jean shorts and a t-shirt, and she's like, I'm not dressed real professional. I don't have any makeup on. I'm sorry. And I'm like, that's fine. I don't have a problem with it. And then she says, it's because yesterday was my mother's funeral.
Wow.
And so I said, wow, that's tough. Why don't you come inside and sit down? And what I told her was, I don't know who I stole this from, but someone deserves credit out there in the universe. What I told her was, all of the grief and the pain that you feel is a reflection of the love that you had left to give this person that you're not going to be able to.
Oh, yes, that is powerful. I like that.
So be grateful that you have the opportunity to grieve, which is different than being grateful for the pain of grieving, right? I'm not grateful that I'm up all night crying, but I'm grateful that there was a love and a relationship. I'm grateful that I was not numb, that I was not stoic,
that you could learn full of love. You could learn through the experience.
Yes. And so when you're grieving, that is you still expressing love, because it's going to show itself regardless of what you do. Your love is going to pour out. But what happened was, you used to love this person in increments. One day we have dinner together. One day we talk on the phone together. One day we text. And now all of the emotion that you have left is not incremental. It is now all pouring out at the same time, unfiltered and damaged, but still beautiful.
That is awesome. Well, you've heard it, guys. This is Dr. Charlton Gaines. You can connect with him. It's charltongaines.com, isn't it?
No, I would say just look for me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, get him on LinkedIn. Or drop me a message and I'll tell you where you can get him. But he's on LinkedIn. Look for him, Charlton Gaines. He's also got the Cope Life podcast himself. And you've got a new TV show.
Yes.
Which is Cope Life on Apple TV. Tell them about that.
Yeah, it's Cope Life Nation.
Cope Life Nation, that's right.
Cope Life Nation. And what it is, the Cope Life Nation is a nation in which our citizens choose to live every day with kindness, optimism, positivity, and empathy. And so the show, Cope Life Nation, it's live on my LinkedIn as well as my Facebook. But it's live on the Limelight Network, and that's on the E360 TV app. So on your television, the same way you download Netflix, the same way you download the Hulu app, you download the E360 TV app. And then when you open it, you have the option to click the Limelight channel. Nice. And that will allow you to watch my show live every Monday night at 6 o'clock Eastern time on your television, on your 85-inch,
it's on,
4 billion pixel.
It's on Apple. Yeah. It's streaming on Apple. It's streaming on Amazon. It's all over the place. And actually, I'll be on it at some point as well. I think we're recording in May, isn't it? May that we're...
Right. You will be on the 22nd.
There we go. 22nd of May. Five days before
my birthday. Monday.
So, Charlton, dude, we never covered everything we wanted. I want to thank you for being my first guest on.
I'm honored.
Be my first guest on the Pillars of Grief. There's so much that we can teach and we can impact people to help them in this journey. I'm honored that you would share your stories with me about your mother, and the stories funny with your father, and there's so much impact you're going to have here again. And I want you to come back a couple of weeks' time. You know, we've got to do part two. 100%, ladies and gentlemen, there's going to be a part two because there's this story does not finish. We are nowhere near this. We've got so much to unpack, and we're going to do that. And even if he didn't want to, I'm going to force him to come on here, but I know he does. So, guys, this is Pillars of Grief. Thank you for listening, and please ask us any questions if you're stuck with anything, and take what you can away from this episode, because really, this was an amazing episode, especially to learn how to honour your loved one in a way that doesn't require any pomp and circumstance, that comes from the heart and the soul and helps you on your grieving journey. Charleston, my brother, I am delighted to have you on, and just a final goodbye to the guys out there, people that are listening from you.
I'm just grateful to be here. I'm just excited to be a part of this process and this journey with you, Jock. I'm grateful for the way that you served me on my journey, man. You've been there for me. Man, I love you, man. I appreciate you. And if you take nothing away, absolutely nothing away from this whole episode, walk away from here knowing that you deserve to be happy.
That's just outstanding. Guys, we'll see you in the next episode. This is the Pillars of Grief. God bless. Thank you for tuning in to the Pillars of Grief with me. If you've found this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Also, leaving a review can help others find the show and receive the guidance they need on their journey through grief. I appreciate your feedback and look forward to hearing from you all. Join my free online support community for those grieving and connect with others who understand what you're going through. I offer you a spiritual blessing and hope you will join me on the next episode. Till then, open your mind and allow the power of the divine to transform your grief to spiritual realization. God bless.